Our treatment of people who carry the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, has improved vastly in recent years. HIV was once feared as a death sentence. Now it can be managed much better, allowing patients to live long lives. We have vaccines for many viruses, and the possibility of developing one to prevent people from contracting HIV was first discussed about the time science realized what HIV was. Our guest was involved then, and he's involved now. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases and is the author of an article just published in Science called The Journey to Find a Vaccine for HIV. Dr. Fauci, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
You've been at this for a long time. Was there a sense in the early days of knowledge about HIV that a vaccine could be developed relatively quickly?
Well, in the very early years, we took the approach towards an HIV vaccine that we took towards the development of vaccines for many microbes, and that is once you isolate the microbe in question, in this case the HIV, that is a pretty straightforward line to being able to get a vaccine. It's more of an engineering thing where you test it and then it works. What we didn't appreciate, I guess somewhat naively but understandably, is that we didn't know in the beginning how difficult the body is in making a good response against HIV. Unprecedented compared to any other virus, where the body could get sick, people could die, but ultimately the body makes a good response against natural infection. We don't make good responses against HIV, so that makes it that much more difficult to get a vaccine to induce a good response. And we only realized that several years into the epidemic. And that's what we've been struggling with over the last several years, is how do you make a vaccine against the microbe where the body just does not like to make a good immune response against it. And that's really the challenge that we've been working on now for several years.
Is it because the vaccine is that alien to the body, or it has mechanisms to knock down the body's responses? Or?
No, it isn't. It's just that the nature of the virus is such that it has a conformation, it mutates, it changes, and it hides its important components in a way that the immune system doesn't recognize the right parts to make a good response against it. So it isn't anything that you might expect that you suggested. It's more of a fundamental, intrinsic inability to make a good response. It's very unique among infections. Almost any infection, no matter how serious it is, ultimately the body does a good job in clearing the infection and making the person be protected against subsequent challenges with that infection. That's just not the case with HIV. It's very puzzling and very unique.
Is there any other virus that even comes close in triggering similar kind of behavior from the body?
No, not at all. Not at all. Particularly among the viruses. I mean, for example, take smallpox, which is a very serious infection. It kills 15 to 20% of the people. Those who don't die get very, very sick. But at the end of the day, 85% of the people recover. And when they do recover, they develop an immune response that's very powerful that protects them against subsequent exposure to smallpox. And when we developed the vaccine against smallpox, we essentially mimicked what natural infection does, because we know at the end of the day, natural infection results into what we call protective immunity. But we can't do that with HIV, because if you look at all of the HIV-infected people in the world, and there are tens and tens of millions of them, you know, many of whom have died, over 38 million of which have died, and 36 million people living with HIV, there's essentially no examples of the immune system of an individual HIV-infected person that spontaneously cleared the virus and essentially eradicated from the body. So the experiment of nature, the natural evolution of all of this, means that we've got to do better than natural infection in inducing a response. And that's why we're very excited. And what I wrote in that article is that over the last couple of years, we have begun to figure out what it is that you need to do to stimulate in the body to get it to make those kinds of responses that you would predict would be protective. You've got to present the body with the proteins of the virus in a certain shape and a certain form that they don't usually see in natural infection. And we think that we're going to get there. I mean, obviously, it's one of those things that we're cautiously optimistic, We've been working on this for years, and it's going to probably take even more years to be able to get to where we want to go.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases. He writes about the journey to find a vaccine for HIV in Science just out last week. You can join us on the Exchange as we talk about the search for the vaccine. 800-838-3760 by phone around the listening area, by email with your questions or comments, jx@jeffnet.org. You describe, Dr. Fauci, two major pathways in working toward a vaccine over the years. What have they been?
Well, the pathways are what I call the empiric pathway, which has really served us well historically. By empiric means you get a candidate vaccine that you project might work. You vaccinate somebody, you look at the response that occurs, and then you try and improve upon it with subsequent iterations of the vaccine. That's, you do it empirically. The theoretical approach means that you determine the kind of response that you want to get before you even empirically try a vaccine. And then you fashion your vaccine to specifically induce that kind of response. And that's the reason why I refer to it as a theoretic approach as opposed to an empiric approach. It becomes clear over the last couple of years that we're going to have to do both. We have done an empiric approach with a candidate vaccine that we tested in Thailand several years ago in about 16,000 volunteers, and it proved to be modestly effective in that it protected about 31% of the people who were vaccinated over those who were not. That's not a particularly exciting percentage, because when you get a vaccine, you're going to want something that is much more protective than 31%. Yet, we could learn from that trial, because we can determine from those who were protected what kind of response did they make and can we improve upon it. So that's the empiric approach. In the meanwhile, we know that some people who get HIV infected make what's called broadly neutralizing antibodies, or very powerful antibodies that can neutralize or kill essentially all different iterations or strains of HIV. Not a lot of HIV-infected people make those antibodies. So the approach that I was describing before, where you specifically make a vaccine or an immunogen to vaccinate somebody with, that would induce those kinds of broadly neutralizing response. And those two approaches are going on in parallel. There are very good people working on the empiric approach, and there are very good people working on the theoretic approach. And hopefully, both of those will converge sometime in the reasonable future to give us what we need, and that is a safe and effective HIV vaccine.
Curious about the trial you mentioned in Thailand. Why there?
Well, the reason is that the Thai government and the people in Thailand were very enthusiastic about having a vaccine trial there, because at the time that we did it several years ago, there was a very high rate of infection among them, and they were able to get a trial going in a very organized way. We're going to do a version of that. By the way, we did a similar trial in the United States, and it actually failed. We didn't get any good response. The vaccine was a little bit of a different vaccine, so it isn't just that we tried it in Thailand and no other place, and now we're going to do a version of that vaccine trial in South Africa, in collaboration with our South African colleagues, because the infection rate in certain areas of South Africa is very, very high. And the higher the infection rate, the more readily you can determine the efficacy or not of a vaccine.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases. We're talking about working toward an HIV virus. His article in Science is The Journey to Find a Vaccine for HIV. 800-838-3760 by phone, jx@jeffnet.org by email. I have been reading about tests on non-human primates. Obviously, they're not us, and their virus is not HIV. Have the tests helped much?
Well, in some respects they have. There isn't a direct correlation between the monkey model. It's a reasonable model, but it isn't a precise model because, as you said correctly, monkeys don't get infected with HIV. They get infected with a simian or monkey version of HIV, which we call SIV. You can make some extrapolations from the monkey model to the human, but you know, when it comes down to it, you ultimately have to test it in humans. But in direct answer to your question, it has been helpful using that model, so long as you have the caveat that it isn't a one-to-one extrapolation from the monkey to the human.
The level of detail in how to make a vaccine, as you describe it in this article, it truly gets down to the molecular level. Is the work in the lab toward creating a vaccine just that much more complicated than for any other virus?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we have developed over the decades now many successful vaccines. You just name it. I mean, if you look at all the childhood vaccines, measles, mumps, rubella, you know, you have pertussis, you have diphtheria, you have tetanus, you have all of the things that we all get vaccinated on with successful vaccines. Strictly speaking, it was relatively easy to do that because you just get a product, either a killed product, be it a virus or a bacteria, or a weakened or what we call attenuated virus. You vaccinate the person, and if you get the right product, you get a reasonably good response and you get a successful vaccine. We didn't have to worry about all things like molecular configurations and the right kinds of antibodies because, as I mentioned to you, natural infection induced the kind of response that you would want a vaccine to induce. So if you just expose somebody to essentially the same product that you get in natural infection, obviously without hurting the person by either killing the virus or attenuating it, weakening it, you generally get the kind of immune response that you're looking for. So you don't have to go through all the contortions of trying to figure out molecular configurations of molecules. As I mentioned before, just a little while ago, that's not the case with HIV, because HIV does not induce that kind of response. So you have to just go out of your way to figure out at the molecular level what the best type of a product is to induce the immune response in a human. And that's why it's been so arduous and why it's taking so long.
Don't all viruses, Dr. Fauci, even inactive ones, leave their DNA in the body's cells? And if so, I mean, doesn't that mean we're talking about not elimination, but just rendering the virus inert in the body?
Good question, but the answer to your question is no, that's incorrect. HIV is called a retrovirus, so it inserts its genetic material into the genome or chromosomes of your cell. That is extremely unusual among viruses that infect mankind. For example, take a common virus, influenza. When you get infected with influenza, that virus infects the cells of your respiratory tract, but it doesn't stick its genetic material into your cells. It infects a cell, the cell dies, and that's it. That's not the case with HIV. HIV can insert itself into the genome of your cell and either kill it or it can lie there in a latent form. And there are very few retroviruses that infect man. One unusual one called HTLV-1 and 2 that can cause tumors in man, certain types of lymphomas and leukemias. But other than that, none of the viruses that we know of have that ability to integrate themselves into the direct chromosomes of your cells. So in that respect, HIV is quite unique, and that becomes quite problematic because it's very difficult to eliminate the virus when it latently sticks its genetic material into your own chromosome.
It seems like there'd be an additional avenue of approach here within medical science, which would be to look out for other viruses that might have similar impacts on the body in the sense that not engendering a real effective immune response. I mean, is there sort of an early warning system to look for viruses like that out there?
Yes and no. I mean, almost every virus that's a new virus, and then, you know, each year we run into a new virus or a reemerging virus. I mean, if you look historically, this year and last year, there's that MERS virus, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, mm-hmm. that has broken out in the Middle East, and now there was a big problem with it in Korea. Years ago, we had SARS, the severe acute respiratory syndrome. We have West Nile virus in the United States that wasn't here until 10 years ago or more. So that's the kind of thing that happens. But when you see a new virus, you can tell right away whether or not it's integrating itself into the genome of your cell. It's pretty easy to figure that out now with the molecular techniques that we have.
We've stuck pretty much to a medical scientific kind of line here, but as we talk about vaccines, I'm reminded there's also a social context, and you're well aware, I'm sure, about this backlash against vaccines by a lot of people. And in that environment, are any gains tempered somewhat by knowing that there might be people who just refuse to take this?
Well, of course there is. I mean, it's a really terrible situation. In fact, tragic in many cases, that mothers, for reasons that are just not valid, are not vaccinating their children against things like measles. And we know we had that rather substantial outbreak last year in Disneyland in California, mostly fueled by children who were not vaccinated. And the reasons for not vaccinating were not really valid. There was a concern that measles vaccine causes things like autism, which is absolutely incorrect. Every scientific study, and there have been many, have indicated that there's absolutely no relationship at all between measles vaccine and the development of autism. Yet many mothers in certain regions of the country, in certain places like in Northern California, Marin County, and in Orange County particularly, but not just confined to those areas, actually did not vaccinate their children. And that could be really a serious problem, because measles is a serious infection, and the vaccine that we have for measles is extremely safe and it's highly effective. So you always get concerned when people, for invalid reasons, misguided reasons, don't vaccinate against diseases like measles that can turn out to be a really serious problem.
Just a couple seconds left here, Dr. Fauci. Were there times you thought were 5 years away, 10 years away, whatever, from an HIV vaccine?
No, I would never predict when we're going to get one. I think we will. I'm more confident today in 2015 that we'll get an HIV vaccine than I was 20 years ago. But I think we're going to get there.
All right. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases. His article, The Journey to Find a Vaccine for HIV, is published in the latest edition of Science. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Good to be with you.
All right.